Luxicult is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
They also make questions dangerous. We will homeopathically fight that shit. Cultural smokescreens will be met with occult practices. We create a safe haven for wonder and judgment. We encourage unquantified reciprocity. We empower critical thinking and agency. We aren't just doing magic. We are fucking magic.
Hello and welcome to Luxicult. This is the podcast where we gleefully taunt the mundane, butcher the Latin and most other languages, and we also discuss a variety of occult topics. Exploring the intersections of magic, art, science, and philosophy, it's occultism for everyone. I am your host, Lux Estrada, and if you're hearing the sound of my voice, that means that magic, and this show, for that matter, are for you. If you want them, there are a lot of different ways to be more free, and using magic or making space for a spiritual practice in your life can be one of them. As always, I don't speak for anybody but myself. Others can, will, and should disagree sometimes. How would we ever learn anything if we all agreed all the time after all? And like anybody who attempts to be reasonable should be willing to do, I am willing to revise my opinions based on new evidence. Today, I am very pleased to bring you Chapter 2 of the Green Mushroom Project Audio Grimoire. There are all kinds of treats in store as we begin to delve into the topics of imaginal magic or astral work and perception and the astral temple, and the unique tool sets that each one of us possess in this regard when it comes to doing this kind of work. There is also a fun and lively panel discussion featuring Shane, Rabbits, Josh, Miguel, Fred or Yaramarod from Faithbound Council podcast and Administrism, and also Flood, who is the host of the XV Planis podcast. And this conversation runs the gambit in terms of going from crass sophomoric humor to great ideas and insights about practicing in the imagination zone and appreciating and working around perceptual differences. There is also a very special episode within the episode featuring the original all-purpose badass author, magician, witch, etc., Aidan Wachter, who is kind enough to hang out and talk about ways that he's worked with the Green Mushroom Project, as well as about how we might best frame our minds to focus on the path to better times. We also chat about being flexible in your practice and his new book Changeling, a book of qualities, and a bunch of other stuff. It's a short but potent conversation, so thanks so much to Aidan for chatting with me and for his support of the Green Mushroom Project. Thanks also to my awesome panel of guests today, and thank you so much for listening. I do appreciate the fact that you've made the choice to hang out with me and my awesome guests and everybody here on this show. I'm very lucky to have such an amazing base of listeners and collaborators, etc. You all are indeed the bee's knees. Avoidant to social media, though I may be, I always welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations. You can reach me at luxocultpod@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Instagram at luxocultpod. If you like the show and you're into what I'm doing, why not consider supporting it on Patreon? If you decide to do so, you can take a bibliomancy break with me. There are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. And to those who are already doing so, thank you so much. Your support really means a lot and it makes this show possible. So much appreciation. Thank you. Okay, so for those who are brand new to this show, welcome. For some quick context here, the Green Mushroom Project is a large-scale group working that you can be a part of, which is focused on healing, connection, creativity, and building solidarity against hate groups and other stupid bullshit like that. We have a simple ritual we do every Friday that involves lighting a candle with the Hypho sigil. Hypho means web. There's also a bunch of other stuff that we get up to. We hang out and do remote group workings online and get into some other fun areas of magical exploration. Check out the show notes for some links about the project and listen to the Green Mushroom Audio Grimoire Chapter 1, which is episode 38 of this show. Sorry, that was kind of a lot of information there. Anyway, there are a variety of tools like guided meditations and stuff like that that we've made available for the project as well, and there will be links to all that stuff in the show notes. As I mentioned a second ago, we talk a lot about perception in this episode. Everyone is working with a slightly unique set of tools in this regard, and as we'll soon see, language can be just as much of a hindrance as it is a help when trying to speak about what happens inside our own heads or in the imagination or astral realms, or as Aidan Wachter refers to it, the other world or worlds. There's a lot of useful advice and insight in this one, as well as some fun joking around, so I think we should go ahead and dive in here in a second. I'll be back during a break, which, due to technical difficulties, happens a little bit early in the episode, but I'll be back to say what's up and introduce a sort of fun classic thought experiment, which ties in nicely with some of today's themes. There will also be a musical interlude featuring Adam Matlock, aka An Historic, playing the Green Mushroom theme composed by the lovely Q Varro. So very stoked to share that, it's very cool. Okay, so before we roll into it here, just a really quick word of caution. Today's panel discussion begins in media res with some really crass humor from some of our panel members. Well, and me too, I must admit. So I've gotten a few negative comments from a few folks, very, very few, but I have gotten them in the past about some of the humor and the language on this show, and I'm not really sure what to say other than that it's certainly not my intention to, like, offend anybody or make anybody feel uncomfortable or anything like that. At the same time, though, like, this is a creative project and I'm gonna have to make it in the way that I can make it and the way that I feel like suits my own, like, vision for it or whatever. So anyway, in regard to how today's panel discussion begins, I could have cut it, but I felt that it might have been, like, sort of inauthentic to do that. Plus, I actually think that it's kind of a good example of how some of our mushroom chats go. You know, like, it can go from, like, joking around about really stupid bullshit into, like, really interesting areas of philosophy and stuff. So humor can be an excellent deterrent to pretension, which I suppose is actually pretty funny in its own right, right? Humor is something that can be humbling and it can be healing, as we've all heard. And there's a lot of pleasure in both laughter and in intellectual pursuits, one of the many reasons I so appreciate being able to interact with the awesome folks involved with the Green Mushroom Project. So much love to everybody participating, regardless of what that looks like for you and your practice. All right, and back to my disclaimer, if blue humor is not your thing and you don't want to hear weird jokes about tentacles and butts and stuff, just skip ahead about 3 minutes. And if you decide to brave it and you enjoy what you hear, may I suggest the Smuts Up Sex Comedy Podcast is a bad show made by idiots, one of them being me. Okay, come for Aidan Wachter and the Astral Temple, stay for the tentacles. Here's Chapter 2 of the Green Mushroom Project Audio Grimoire.
Stop with this? Or?
No, I just wanted to let everybody
right,
know.
Right, yeah, that's the part you want to continue with, the fact that Ron Jeremy, his body is just slowly birthing an eldritch horror.
An eldritch yes. Furry.
Ugh, just weird hairy tentacles everywhere.
If you tied his back hair blue, he'd be the spitting image for Sonic the Hedgehog.
I don't know about that.
No, John.
No, I was thinking more like Monsters, Inc., except with more tentacles, somehow.
Monsters, Inc. Hentai Edition? Yeah.
Oh, fucking A, oh, man.
I know that exists out there.
That's a thing I
You know
need.
That exists.
I'm sure it's a thing.
Oh, no, I know it's a thing, but it's not something that I wanted to think about.
You can't stop thinking about it.
No, I can't now. God fucking damn it.
That's what he's saying.
You're welcome.
And this is why I'm proud that I have aphantasia. Like, I don't have to feel.
Oh, shit. Damn it.
You're not seeing any of the things in your mind that I'm seeing. That is very interesting.
Yeah, which means he can lob visualization bombs at us and then not have to suffer the effects.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh, no. It's really just a form of, you know, like, psychic warfare where I can do this. I'm like a special ops warrior with the psychic realm.
I know, like the tentacles. Am I right?
Yeah, just fucking hairy Ron Jeremy tentacles, just reaching every possible orifice that they can. Like this isn't this isn't a problem for me.
So girthy.
It's not a problem for me either, Yara. Just kidding.
Thick.
That's pretty gross.
And girthy. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the green mushroom topic.
All right, so we're going to lead from that and go into something with mushroom in the title.
Absolutely.
Chuckle.
There's a built-in dick joke to this project, which I think we should celebrate.
All occultism is just chugging dick. We've been over this before.
I mean, I don't know. People sometimes talk about drugs and butt stuff, so I mean...
That's true.
Hey, don't knock it till you try it, you know?
Okay. Well, occultism can be a lot of things. We're totally joking, and it can mean whatever you need it to mean in your life and your practice.
Oh, I just meant butt stuff. Don't knock it till you try it.
Oh, sure.
Butt stuff, occultism, it's this
thing. Whatever people are doing.
Apparently, the anus is magical.
Yeah, you gotta get the source of power somehow.
Yeah, that's where Crowley stored all of his magic. Right up there.
Right up in that chakra, yeah.
All right, well, plus, yeah, thank you guys so much for joining me today for this second installment of the Green Mushroom Audio Grimoire. Have a great crew of people here. How about, if you all wouldn't mind, let's just sort of go around and introduce ourselves as we did last time.
Hi, I'm Miguel. I joined over the podcast. And I've been hanging out with you guys for over a year now. Not sure what else. I think that's about it for me.
Okay. Shane.
Hey, I also picked up on the green mushroom through listening to Lux Occult podcast. I've no idea how long I've been involved in the project. I started off life as a sci-fi author, and then I discovered magic was real and have been leaning into these kind of practices ever since, I guess. That's it.
Hell yeah. All right, looks like next on the list is Josh.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm also Junior C on the server. I'm an engineer and biologist by training, and I started looking at chaos magic, practicing and studying about 3 years ago, somewhere in there, found Faith Blind Council, got on the Discord, and I was around to see the Green Mushroom Project grow up and become the awesome thing that it is now.
Fuck yeah. All right, Rabbits.
Hi, I'm the Rabbits. I'm a chaos magician, been involved with the project for about a year as well.
All right. And
Yara, short for Yara Marud. I consider myself a hillbilly alchemist librarian, founder of the Faith Blind Council, and runner of the fucking Discord server, something like that.
Oh, yeah. And we also have a special guest joining us today, Flood, a host of the XV Planis podcast. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hi, I'm Flood. I'm the rookie. I chase ghosts, UFOs, and dead things and things like that. And when I'm not doing that, I am trying to get back in touch with my magical self, which is what has brought me to you amazing people. And so here I am.
Oh, yeah. So we're hoping that having Flood here today will help us keep on track in terms of if we start to go into the weeds talking about specialized things that other people might get lost. He's here to keep us on track and to ask any questions.
If that introduction was any indication of how we're going to go.
Yes. So keep us on track, Flood. It's a big job, but I'm sure you'll be able. I'm totally joking.
Keeping you all on track. No, yeah, no, no worry. Look, I got my tranquilizer darts here. I've got my lassos. We're good.
Can I get one of those beforehand?
No. But you can have extra at the end as a treat.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome.
So, if we get like into some territory where we're using terms that aren't clear or anything like that, please stop us and let us know, and we can address that.
Yeah, I'll scale you guys back if needed.
All right, fuck yeah. So, first of all, I feel like we should probably cover just a general concept of what an astral temple is, leading into what the Green Mushroom Project Astral Temple is.
A very basic overview. I have a personal astral space that I work with, and I use the the Green Mushroom Astral Temple. For astral space, my general definition is anything that I'm using imaginally, not imaginarily, but interacting with the space that I create through visualization, where I'm inviting other beings into that space. Occasionally, there's other stuff that lives there. I define the parameters of the space, and I use that for meditation and some ritual work. And then taking that to the next level for a more dedicated shared space, I'd say an astral temple is any space, as I just described, where you have multiple users using it either simultaneously or not contemporaneously, when they're, you know, what is it, when you're fucking using the same place but not at the same time?
Asynchronously, perhaps?
Yes, that's the word. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, totally. That's similar to how I conceive of it.
Okay, that's my boring dictionary definition. If anybody else wants to add some flavor to that, please do.
Well, I think it's a complicated topic, and there's a lot of different thoughts about these, you know, ideas about like the astral realm, astral projection, the imaginal zone. So we try to like keep the terminology pretty loose because we're not really looking to have a lot of like semantic or ontological arguments about it. We're really trying to take it from a, like a more pragmatic stance. So you might hear us using terms like imagination zone or whatever. And that's just to sort of move away from some of the baggage that is associated with some of these older terms.
However, with using that point, I do like to make, as someone with aphantasia, a kind of stipulation between the two.
Okay.
So, like, as someone with aphantasia, so I can't visualize anything, right? I close my eyes, all I see is just darkness. That's it. I can't visualize anything else. I can't visualize things overlaying on top of things. I cannot visualize. And so I draw a distinct line between visualizing something and imagining something.
Okay, that's really interesting, because a lot of times the things that I, quote, see in my mind will be other than pictures, but they'll be like more abstract ideas that translate into pictures. I'm curious that maybe it's so interesting, like the talking about this stuff is so difficult, right? We can't climb inside each other's heads. So like, yeah, that's very interesting. Okay, so when we're talking visualization, like I think that that's a term too. It has visual right in it. And I think that that could be something that definitely does hang up a lot of people, because there's a lot of different sensory input other than visual that can be like imagined, right?
Right. Mm. And like that's one of the distinctions that I like to make between visualization and imagining something. So I had mentioned this on our server ages ago, because someone who also had aphantasia had asked me a question like, how do I, you know, because so many magical texts, many, many magical texts ask you to visualize that this is happening, visualize that something is occurring. And I can't do that. And someone had asked me, like, how do you visualize? Like, I don't. I imagine that it's happening, but I don't visualize. So the difference between imagining something and visualizing something, for those people who can visualize something, and I know that you, Miguel, I've spoken to you before about this, you kind of have
yes.
Hyperphantasia. You visualize things very, very, very well.
Yes. Just a note on that, on the other extreme, you're right about it not just being visual, because saying I visualize seems like an understatement. It's just like another reality. I can feel everything like as if it's real, but it's just off enough that I can tell the difference so that I'm not, you know, jumping at nothing, you know, into physical reality. So it has a wide variety of, it can, all your senses can be engaged, and sometimes you can feel things that aren't a sense as well. It just depends on the person.
Right. And I know that in my last conversation involving this, like, you had taken the exercise that I had given out and found difficulty in doing so, where what I did was I said, okay, if you can visualize things, if you can like perceive something with your eyes closed or however, just visualize the Eiffel Tower. And while visualizing the Eiffel Tower and like being in that environment where you can see it, where you can be in that area, describe an orange to me without taking your mind off of what you are seeing, without like bringing in an orange, just see the Eiffel Tower, and then describe an orange to me.
Well, with that, I would imagine having an orange in my hand while I'm under Eiffel
exactly.
Tower.
Like, now you are visualizing that orange. Like, I don't see that.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I can only describe, based on past experience, based on, like, past memories, what an orange looks like.
But yet you still have an imagination that you work off of, right?
Yes. However, that imagination is based entirely on past memories.
Okay. All right. So, but it's still an imagination. So I think, at least from what I'm hearing, that there might be like a loss in translation, like the concept of visualizing something or like trying to manifest something, going too literal on the terms might. Because I understand what you're saying. Like, I have trouble creating actual imagery in my mind, but playing out a narrative. So let's say maybe I do better with voiceovers than I do with movies in my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's you absolutely can visualize. It's just you use the term visualize and it immediately makes one think of it has to be a visual image.
Well, it's not even so much a visual image. Like I see nothing. It's just a remembrance of what it is, if that makes sense. I can't do anything except associate words that I already know with that thing.
It's like, okay, I'm thinking about it sort of like in a sort of computery way. Like you have, there's like a JPEG somewhere of the image of the Eiffel Tower, but you can't really open the JPEG, but you do know where it's stored and what it's related to based on like where it's stored.
Sort of. Yes. And it also has a lot to do with language. Like I've been on plenty of other places talking about language. I associate words with a specific thing. So I can't visualize it. I can't, like, actually picture it. I'm not doing anything except associating words with that I already know. So, like, I can say an orange is obviously orange, but it's round. It has a bumpy texture, sort of. But I can't do anything but associate concepts that I already have with it. I don't see it, but there's a connection via language.
So it wouldn't be like, you know, astral blindness where all your other senses work. So like, could you feel or smell or hear things?
That's a good question. Sometimes like and that also ties into language as well, because like if I describe an orange to you, I'm going to use words that I already have.
Hell yeah. I just wanted to say, I think it's interesting here because we're kind of touching on some of the like deeper issues of semiotics itself, I think. I think we're hitting some bedrock here in terms of like how we talk about this shit. So,
right.
Yeah,
yeah, you're getting into the philosophical concept of qualia.
Kind of related to that, but when I'm doing astral work, I can use like all of my senses. So it's not just seeing things, but also smells and sounds and feelings on my skin, so tactile as well.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of people, there's going to be like a sort of like gradation in terms of like how all these different senses play out when we're doing imaginal magic or whatever.
Yeah. I am bound.
Hey, what's up? It's Luxa from the future here. As I mentioned earlier, we had a bit of tech trouble at this point in the recording, so I thought it would be a good time to pop in and say thank you so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I really appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation like this where we can share about the nuanced differences of our own experiences. Not only is it just sort of generally interesting, well, at least to me, to think about what it might be like to perceive in a manner other than the one that we're accustomed to, but I think there's also an opportunity to build empathy, which I've always contextualized as a type of, I don't know, understanding or intelligence. Not to get too far into the semantic weeds here with that. Anyway, the next episode of the Green Mushroom Project Audio Grimoire will be about some of the experiments that we've run in the shared astral space associated with the project, which we are discussing today. So, speaking of experiments, though, as I promised earlier, here is a thought experiment which is tangential to our panel's conversation about perception and aphantasia and the like. So I got this wording of it from a site called Big Think, which had some pretty nice summations of this and a few others, so thank you so much to them for that. All right, so this thought experiment is called Mary's Room, and it was proposed in 1982 by the philosopher Frank Jackson. So this would fall under the auspices of the branch of philosophy called epistemology, which is defined as the philosophical study of the nature, origin, and limits of human knowledge. I'll share some of what people have said about this thought experiment after the panel discussion, but here it is for you to ponder in the meantime. Mary lives in a black and white room, reads black and white books, and uses screens on a computer that only display images in black and white, and learns everything that has ever been discovered about color vision and physics and biology and any other thing that you can think of, using all of these many tools that Mary has available. This is my own wording now. But yes, one day, Mary's computer screen malfunctions and displays the color red. So for the first time, Mary sees color, even though Mary has already known all of these other things about color. But here's the question. Does Mary learn anything new from this happening? I will be back later to address this question, but if you have any thoughts about it now, I would encourage you to send them to me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or at luxoccultpod on Instagram. I'm toying with the idea of reading listener mail on the show because I do get some really amazing and very fun stuff. You all are very cool. If you're into the idea, or if you're not, all constructive feedback is helpful, let me know. We're going to be hearing from Aiden Wachter in a little while about his thoughts on working with the Green Mushroom Project and much more. Really stoked to share that conversation with all of you, so stay tuned for that. But for now, let's dive back into it here with our lively panel discussion. All right.
Just realized what my personal like astral temple looked like, and it's the crystalline entity from Star Trek: The Next Generation. It's pretty damn similar to what it looks like.
Nice. Mine is super basic. I didn't realize how basic it was until I started like reading about other people's, but it's like on the inside.
Yeah.
Mine is a massive cavern.
Nice.
That's cool.
Mine also feels kind of like synapses in the brain or neurons connected together.
I should connect now.
Okay, hell yeah. All right, Yara, you're back. You were saying something about qualia.
We're kind of getting into the concept of qualia. With what qualia is, it's a philosophical concept in which the things I experience can't necessarily be described by what you experience. So this gets back to the philosophical concept of, is the color red the same that I see that the same that you see? Is it the same color?
Sure, yeah. This is known as like the inverted spectrum hypothesis, I think, or something along those lines.
Right.
Yeah.
And this gets into what qualia is. It's a very subjective and totally subjective kind of concept. Like it's not the same thing. And that is very similar to what aphantasia is. Like I can describe my experience completely, but unless you understand the terminology that I'm using, unless you understand like how I'm describing things, it doesn't exactly click with you. So like when I say I can't see things, I can't feel things, like everything that I experience absolutely has to deal with language. And so anytime I describe something is based purely on language and things that I have past experienced. So like one example is like when I'm reading books, I fucking hate it when like the author starts describing a room or anything, because I cannot understand what they are trying to describe. Because while I'm reading something, if they start to describe what's happening in a house or something, I just associate it with a room that I have already seen or been in.
Hmm.
I think to some extent I do that
too. I mean, like, we all have these sort of like models that we work off. I don't know. It's interesting. I think, and thank you for like explaining this stuff. I think it is really cool to like explore like these different ways of perceiving and stuff. I do want to like drive home the main point though, is that even though you have these differences in how you, you know, imagine or whatever you want to call it, like, it doesn't negate your effectiveness as a magician, right?
Oh no, absolutely not. Like, it just, as far as I've come across, like, when all of these occult texts say visualize something, it just takes a little bit more work as a magician with aphantasia to try and do this. It doesn't ruin efficacy at all. It's just a little bit more work.
Yeah. And so, like, if you're reading something out there, people listening, that, you know, it's like, well, my brain doesn't quite seem to, like, that doesn't click with me. It doesn't, my brain doesn't seem to work like that. Like, just, I don't know, take your own twist on it and do it in the way that it does work for you. Like, that's what I've always done.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because, and as we were just mentioning, like, language is so imperfect. So it's possible that that's what the author meant anyway, and they just didn't, you know, explain it well enough for you to understand, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it kind of comes full circle with me for a long time, sometimes even till recently. I would assume I'm doing it wrong because it's too easy. And a lot of the descriptions in podcasts and books are just like, you'll have to practice to get good at visualization. And I'm just assuming I'm doing it wrong because I'm not, it's a little bit too quick.
It's not hard enough.
Exactly. It's like, this is not hard enough, so I must be doing it wrong. And I just had to learn to just allow me to have my own experience and just work with it. If it works, it works.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. Like, sometimes it's going to be a little easier than you expect, and you might already be doing the thing that you're trying super hard to do.
Yeah.
And no two people are the same. I mean, you can go through the same exact set of magical texts and perform the exact same rituals, and everybody's going to have different outcomes.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
You know, this conversation about the different sorts of perception you can have in the imaginal zone, I wish I had known about it even before I had discovered magic, when I was more interested in things like astral projection, totally outside of imaginal magic, just for the sake of going somewhere and doing something. I don't have a strong visual imagination, though, and I thought that that would be like a prerequisite where you had to build it up first rather than using these other you know, modes of interfacing, like proprioception. The touch tactile thing is big for me, and sounds, and even language, like having a narrative going in the space. These are all things that you wouldn't maybe think of if you just heard astral projection and wanted to, you know, be the right kind of thinker or perceiver, I guess, but didn't feel like you were.
I think that's what I was trying to hint at earlier, is that using the term visualizing, you know, to visualize something, I think we might be taking it a little too literal in this sense. This can mean a lot of things. It can mean dream journaling. It can mean narrating, like doing some sort of mantra where you're literally like narrating your future, like whatever it takes for you to cast you out into the ether to mold your own reality, you know? Using the term visualization doesn't necessarily have to mean playing that movie in your head. It could be you poetically speaking your future as you're going to sleep every night.
Right. And I think that's a very important thing to distinguish, because since I can't visualize, which, as you have said, contains the word visual, a lot of my magic had to do with sound. A lot of my magic has to do with bodily sensations. So I replace that aspect of visualization with things like sound. A lot of my magic has to do with sound and language and like moving your body and doing things that are tactile, because I believe very much that like all of your senses can tap into this etheric space. And so like, when it gets onto the concept of like invocation or evocation, like what do you experience if there's a spirit in the air? Well, I hear things that are not exactly like what I had planned on there being.
Yeah, that happens to me too sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's the thing, like I'll hear things, or like I will feel a sensation, like there's a pressure at the back of my spine, there's no visualization. I don't see things. The only time I've ever seen things or used a kind of visual technique is when I've like tried to remember what a map of a certain place looked like. And then I would stare at a candle, and I can still close my eyes after staring at a candle and see like faint traces of light. And I would try and imagine what a map was and where that faint trace of light would stand in relation to that map. So if I see it at the upper right of my vision, like it's going to be at the upper right of that map.
Hmm. Okay. And is this sort of an exercise that you were experimenting with to see if you could like adjust these, you know, abilities to visualize?
Yes.
Cool. All right. And was it something that you found helpful?
Oh yeah. I mean, I found the dead water based on that. So, I mean, it was something.
Cool. Well, yeah. So people listening that, you know, are aphantasic or on that, you know, side of things, because it is a spectrum, right? And something like that could be a cool experiment to mess around with. So hell yeah. Okay. So before we get too far into the weeds philosophically, because there's all kinds of interesting things we could talk about here, I do want to just make sure that we cover the components of the Green Mushroom Astral Temple and sort of what is it and what have we made it for, and just sort of a basic overview of that specifically.
The basic architectural tour.
Yes. We should mention that there is a episode which is like an introductory tour of this, you know, imaginal space where you can kind of go with us through it as we're imagining it together. And there will be a link to that in the show notes for this episode. But yeah, for people who haven't checked that out, like, let's give them a quick overview of the floor plan, perhaps.
Well, when I've used it, I entered through a door, and from the outside, it looks like a big damn shroom. I don't have any good indication of what species of mushroom it is. I'm not enough of a mycologist to know or care. But there's a door towards the base of the stem. Going through there, that's where the guardian is posted up. And then moving beyond that is where the general social area, tavern, is. Craft areas, music, if you're visualization. Anyway, yeah.
Imaginal stuff.
Yes, imaginal music. Yeah. If it tends that way. And then there's transportation. I have, I guess, teleportation pads. I don't know if other people use that to get between the areas. I don't use the stuff in the base, but the upper floor I've used extensively, and that's where the cubicles, personal apartments, study areas are in a ring, or an inner and outer ring, I guess, around a circumferential hallway on the outer edge. And then the inside of the upper story is where the shared ritual space is.
Hell yeah. And this ritual space also exists underneath too, a sort of like, I guess we sort of thought about it as like being superpositioned, like both, you know, above and below at the same time. Because yeah, the underneath is where there's like the morphotic elements of the project, like the mycelial networks. We have a pool down there that we found, and there's been all kinds of like cool work done there. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Shane?
Yeah, okay. So the pool down in the basement of the mushroom, if that's the right word for it, basement. We did a guided meditation based partially on Franz Barden's Black Mirror, White Mirror work. And it focuses on the four elemental directions and finding how that energy can manifest in positive and negative ways in your own life, and going through these personal examples and creating a little memento or a totem to remember how that energy is kind of manifested in you. So through the course of the guided meditation, you end up kind of with these, you know, four light and four dark totems. And it gives you the opportunity to really think about, you know, the different energies and elements going into you and how you can, you know, use them for good or ill, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty much the light and dark one.
Yeah, totally. And there will be a link to that in the show notes as well if people want to check it out.
One part of now getting down to the pool and that area, I always take the tunnels. And the way I visualize that is it's you're kind of crawling through this space, like slithering on your belly type of situation. And it's really tight. And if you were claustrophobic, it might be something that would set you off. But it's I find it like a comfort, and it's a time to allow like negativity in your life to just kind of slough off with you as you travel. So when you get out of this thing, it's kind of like you're reborn fresh, and everything that's been like troubling you or a negative influence in your life has just kind of stayed there to mulch with the mushroom, and whatever came out is fresh and ready to go again.
Yeah, fuck yeah, I love that.
Hey, what's up? It's Luxa from the future here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. It is time now for a very special episode within the episode featuring Aiden Wachter. It was a very cool conversation. Super stoked to share it here in a second. I just want to say that I really appreciate Aiden taking the time and for his support of the Green Mushroom Project. You can find Aiden's new book, Changeling, A Book of Qualities, as well as all of his other dope work at aidenwachter.com. The hypersigil technique that he outlines in the book Weaving Fate is something that I know a lot of folks are having really good results with. I won't say too much, but I've recently heard some news from somebody about a project they've been working on in this regard, which has taken an unexpected turn in a majorly positive direction. And gods, I couldn't be more fucking pleased to hear it. There's a really sublime satisfaction in seeing how these things play out sometimes, even if it's just secondhand, you know, or maybe even especially. Unclear. Anyway, in the conversation that you're about to hear, Aiden points out a common flaw in thinking that I struggle with, I think as do most of us. It has to do with assessing the impact of our own actions. I'm going to touch more on this at the end of the episode, but for survival reasons, there's a sort of built-in negativity bias in our brains, meaning that we're more likely to notice shitty things than good things. I suppose trying to maintain a rational and positive outlook could be seen as a way of combating this innate bias in order to see more clearly. I've learned a lot from talking with Aiden and reading his work, so if you haven't already, be sure to check his stuff out. We will return to hear more from our panel in a little bit, but without further ado, let's get into it here. Here is my chat with Aiden Wachter about the Green Mushroom Project. Hell yeah. Well, I am here with Aiden Wachter to talk about the Green Mushroom Project and all kinds of other stuff. Aiden, how's it going?
It is going very good.
Fuck yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me about this stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So last time we spoke, you were telling me about some kind of interesting experiences that you've had in your approach to the Green Mushroom Astral Temple.
Yeah. So I have gotten to, I can't even remember because it's been long enough now since I've tried it again, but when I go into the astral temple, the guardian generally goes, go talk to the sisters who are kind of my main allies that I work with in trance work. And it's been really interesting. And I think that I have my theories about this, and we can go into this. But and so what I've ended up doing is not trying to go to the Astro Temple anymore, because I tried this a few times and I didn't need to be a pain in the ass, but instead working with the web, kind of using the notes that I got off of the site that you have set up, of working with the statement of intent, using the sigil, using green, and doing it on Fridays. I don't do it every Friday, but I do it a fair amount of time. And then kind of doing a freeform ritual based about the little, what I'm calling the resist commentary as my connection, as my addition to the work of the web.
Fuck yeah, dude, I love that. So you said there were some more details about these astral excursions. I'm curious to hear your theories.
I don't really get to play outside of where I get to play. And this is not me being feeling butthurt about it or anything like that. But over the years, my experience is in the astral or in the other world, however you want to view it. I tend to think of it as the other world, are fairly limited to specific zones. And my attempts to move too far out there beyond that are not in any way unpleasant. I can go to other places, but nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Or if I do encounter spirits in those other places or entities, they just suggest I go back to where I live, basically. And I think that this is tied to some transformative work that both the sisters and the brothers have done with me, who are these two kind of tribes or hives of spirits that I work with, that to work with them, I think there's ways that I am kind of on that internal magical level, kind of coded to them now.
Sure, that makes sense. Like you've been sort of, your frequencies have been adjusted, or however you want to think like, about it.
Yeah. Like they got inside the machine and tripped a bunch of different dip switches that created a particular frequency that I can connect to. That's now mostly what I connect to. And so that's them, and then the folks that I just in general speak of, the allies who I don't interact with in that way at all. And so I think that that's what it is. And so I think it is really like being recognized as like, this isn't where you need to hang out. But because I am so down with the intention of the project, that's why I've kind of continued. And I've kind of, much in the way that I might do something like the Reclaiming Rite from Six Ways, or it's also in Changeling, I use kind of that, whatever we're going to call it, you might have a name for it. I call it the resist spell or whatever.
Yeah, I think we usually call it like the statement of resistance. But yeah, I mean, call it whatever you like.
I call it the resist thing.
The resist thing. Well, you sometimes say the words.
Yeah, I use it as just kind of a connection to the project and a connection to Feed the Web and a reminder of those things to myself. Because to me, they're very related to my general approach to magic.
Fuck yeah. So we've spoken a lot about this in the past, and this is something that I really appreciate about your work, is this idea of inclusivity, because I do think that just because of the language that is sometimes used in magic or in other places, it can lead to the misconception that if you're not really good at, say, imagining pictures in your head or whatever the thing might be that is being asked of you, that there's, you know, you shouldn't be playing in this space. This isn't for you. And it really couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that. Yeah. And I think that's true on so many levels. There's so many things that are kind of, there's things that are stated that are kind of gatekeepy in my mind, stated things that you have to be able to do or whatever, or you can't do magic, or you're not really doing magic, or you're not really a witch or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
But then there's also kind of a lot of, I think if you don't really work, and I work really hard and I hope I do a good job of it, to try and be clear when I'm talking about the pieces that are kind of concrete importance and the ones that are way more flexible, it's really easy to read, I think, most books on magic and really think that there's all of these things that must be present for you to do the work. So like we could say, for example, like I'm an animist and I'm really spirit driven, but I really don't interact with spirits who I know their names, and being that I am pretty much completely aphantasic, I don't really see them unless I'm in very deep trance. And yet I still do that work. And there's a lot of people that would go like, well, you can't do that work because you can't see them. And I've had people say this to me, and it's just kind of like, awesome.
Yeah, how would you even say that?
I think that's wonderful that you think that. And I don't care. What do you think?
Yeah, it's just patently ridiculous, right? Like, I don't know.
And so I think it's really interesting because it's like one of the things that came up in Changeling that while I was writing it is I found out that my books were being used in by prisoners in the prison system in the UK. And that there's a pagan prison chaplain who's doing really good work with the guys in there. I had always been trying to be really clear that you could do this in any way, do this work in many, many ways, I guess. And you could always find a way to make it work. that really kind of hit me, is like, whoa, like dirt could become really difficult to get access to.
Yeah.
Like way beyond, I'm like in the city and I can't find a crossroads that has dirt, you know, or candles are just not an option, or incense is not an option, or probably, you know, it's a tool of steel to do scraping with is not an option. And so it really did influence how Changeling happened and probably what I will write going forward, to try and be more and more inclusive, you know, or like we decided, my publisher and I decided not to do ebooks, but we are creating accessible versions of our books that will not be sold, but they will be made available to people who can't, you know, use a printed book.
Oh, that's awesome. Hell yeah. I know that my friends will want to know if you're going to be putting audiobooks out. I've got a couple of dyslexic friends who would love that to happen.
I don't have a plan to do that. I did for a while, but at the moment the intention is just to go with print books and then accessible books. I do have intentions of reformatting Six Ways, because I know that that one with small type and ligatures is particularly difficult for folks that aren't necessarily visually impaired, but for dyslexic folks in particular, it's been that book's a little rough.
It has a funky script on it, but it is cool. It's a cool script, but it's funky.
Yeah, there's a good number of those books floating around. So if anybody ever really desperately needed a copy with ligatures, they could find one. But that's one of the things that's on the table, is to reformat that book into a larger font and without the ligatures to make it more user-friendly. But I think it's very easy because we have these, I think that there's a few things going on right now, which is one, we've got this kind of history of tools in magic, you know, so there's the sword or the nut blade and the cup and the wand and all of this stuff. And then you do the drawing symbols in the air and you create these drawn out talismans, or depending on which grimoire you're working with, you know, you make these amalgamations of different metals and cast them and then inscribe all these things that are generally impossible for most people to do. And I think my take about magic has always been that really none of those things are what's important, unless they're important to the specific way that you have created the work that you're going to do to work. You know, so I think it makes absolute sense to build a practice around that stuff if you want to. And I don't know, I think it's in Changeling, but I could be wrong. It could be something that didn't make it in there. Is the idea that one of the things that also goes on along right now is there's this question of substitutions of materia. Like, okay, if I can't get Abrai Camino to do this piece of road opening work that's in Weaving Fate, which I didn't realize was very much a North American, only available if you're around stores that cater to ATRs. I just always have been, and that's where I shop.
I think you did say it in Changeling, though. It's like, well, if you need rosemary for the spell, but you can't get rosemary, you should probably make it so the spell doesn't need to have rosemary specifically.
Yes, exactly. So that is in there. Good. I knew that I'd read it. I didn't know whether it had made it. And so that's the other part of this, is realizing, like, you can change the work to work for you. And so it's like just looking at this thing like, okay, my allies and the mushroom don't want me in that space. That doesn't mean I can't still be a part of the project. And it doesn't mean that I can't support that network and can't support that web and can't put my energy in there and can't tap into that energy. I just have to do it in a different way. And I've been on this path long enough to know that. So I don't go, ooh, I'm just going to keep trying until it works, or something's wrong with me and so I can't be involved. I'm just going to go, okay, what's a simple and workable way to tap in here and do it? And I think that that's, you know, I get this a lot from people going like, I live in apartments that are somewhere where I can't have candles. And you go, then change all your spells so they don't require candles. Mm-hmm. But they're like, I could use an LED candle. It's like, sure, if you want to use an LED candle, but it's not a candle.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a light. It's okay.
Sense to you.
Right? But if that works, if you can change the spell so it works with an LED candle, then that's great. For me, fire is about burning shit. So
yeah,
it doesn't really work.
Sure. Yeah. It depends. Like, yeah, what does the candle mean to you? Right. Like, for me, it's about, yeah, like transformation and sort of a sacrifice thing too. The candle gives its life for you to do what you're going to do in a way. Right. Like, it, I don't know. So, yeah.
But if it's, you know, just illumination, then strap on the headlamp and go for
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah. Go for it. I mean, whatever works. Right. Fuck yeah. So this is one thing that I was hoping we could touch on while you're here. And, you know, this idea of like looking forward, of being in the driver's seat, like this is something that's so central to a lot of your work. And this is something that, you know, within the statement of resistance, we end on, which is focus on the path to better times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the book, that comes up as the path follows the gaze. And this is, I don't know if it's in any of my other books, but it could have been because it's been a huge thing for me a long time. But it really kind of came to the forefront in Changeling. There's so many layers to it. The first layer is not even necessarily, most people won't think about it as really being path related, but we know that we see often what we expect to see. And this leads to a lot of bad outcomes. One of the things that I knew a guy who was a cop who talked about this, and he moved into, when he was able, he moved out of patrol work, because he realized that doing the patrol work for so long had programmed his mind to see threat in so many places that he was behaving and he had his shit together enough to know it. So he went, and he became, I think he went into forensics or something, I can't remember, but he did a lot of college work to get out of that kind of work so that he could remain in law enforcement because that was his passion. But he realized, like, he was now seeing people not as people. He was seeing people as types. And so he was seeing threats that weren't really present. And he said that, yeah, he basically realized that he had to get off patrol before he shot somebody because due to his history, he thought what they were doing was going for a gun. And this is a really good one because I think we can see that this is happening more and more, that with the kind of militarization of that function in our societies, there's a perception of war, and people who believe they're at war act like they're at war, which then creates, you know, a feedback loop that then the people that they are patrolling are also aware that they're at war and begin to act as if they're at war. So in one sense, that gaze issue is you have to be very careful about where you put your mind and what you choose to do the programming with, because the programming is happening. And we've talked about that before, I know. I'm not sure that you get to not be involved in kind of programming yourself and being programmed. It's just who we are as animals. And I don't know of any animals that this doesn't happen with. For us, it's very involved because we're such conceptualizers. So the first thing is, yeah, looking where you put your attention. And then because you see, and again, the reason is that you see what you expect to see in general. If you expect to find problems, you will find a problem. If you expect to see optionality, if you accept to see paths through whatever difficulties are present, you will tend to see those things. This doesn't mean you won't encounter problems, because there are problems. none of this makes, as I've said many times, magic or our thought processes or changing the way we view things doesn't make reality go away. It doesn't make the world go away. But it gives us tools to interface with it differently. And so the next phase of that, which is really critical right now, I think, is that for a lot of us, I believe just a lot of people, it is very hard to see good outcomes from the path that we're on as a, you know, society or cultural or world. And I have this hugely, I'm kind of a doomer. And so I have to work on this one a lot. Because again, we tend to go where we're looking. If you think about driving the car, or more specifically, the example I use most of the time, because if anybody has ever gone mountain biking, they will learn this instantly.
I feel like we talked about this.
I think we have.
The first time we talked, I was like, if you're learning to ride a bike and you just look at the trees on the side of the path, you're just going to hit the tree. I've had this experience.
Yeah, right? Totally. It's like, so the path follows the gaze. And what that means is you will go where you are looking. And so if all you look at is bad times, no way out, problems, all you will find are bad times, no way out, and problems. And this is really one of the roots behind New Thought, which exists in both really kind of interesting and really kind of, in my mind, stupid forms.
Like sure.
Everything else. Yeah. Like everything else.
Yeah,
totally. And you can't bag on them if you're a magician, because it's not like we don't have way more of the stupid than we have anything else as well.
Sure.
Yeah, this is not a New Thought or New Age problem. this is a general human problem. And so I think that that piece of the resist spell, what I'll call it, focus on the path to better times, is really crucial. Because otherwise we don't get there. And we have to at least believe that we can find ways to move things in better ways. Even if it's focusing on finding the path to better ways. If you can't quite believe that there could be one,
sure.
You could open up that option. This is what I've had to do, is go like, okay, I see a bad end for humanity, but I'm going to go out of my way to also see good ends or better ends or better forms. And it's radically changed my perspective. I'm not as much of a doomer as I was. And I do see ways that things can improve. I do see ways that I could help. And that's huge for me, because there was a big period of time where I really didn't. That's why I started writing, you know?
Fuck yeah. I mean, you got to do what you can do, right? Like, at least that's how I feel. Like, I don't know if anything I'll ever do will have any impact, but all you can do is fucking try, right? Like,
well, and I think one of the things that we know is that everything has impact. It's a question of,
sure,
do we have, is there, you know, enough weight on that impact combined to change things?
Yes, that is an error in my thinking, actually, that you've just pointed out. Thank you.
Everything, yeah. Everything happens, you know, or everything has impact, and everything is, it's like, you know, it ties into that binary thinking thing that we've talked about, but it sinks into the other one of like, can you find a way to see paths through the stuff you can't see paths through? And can you make a project of that? Like, you go, when you hit a place where you go, I don't see any good outcome of that, can you just make that a practice of going, okay, I'm going to write down 20 good outcomes of this, even if they're fucking absurd. I don't believe them. I'm going to make them up, and I'm going to look at them and go, these are shit. And I'm going to do that process. And then can you take, you know, 60 seconds and put everything else behind and go, I'm now going to look at this as if they're viable. And begin that process of changing that conditioning that says you can only see this one way. Because otherwise we're rats in mazes.
It's so simple too. Like, it's not, you don't have to like do this like kind of world shattering magic to like change your perspective. Like, all you have to do is like write some shit down, right? Like, it's, you know, it doesn't have to be like super complicated. I think that's something that you mentioned. I think it's in all of your books, actually, about how people will oftentimes make things way more complicated than they need to be. And as you're saying, like, you just take a second to think about it, write it down. You don't need to have any special herbs or candles or crystals or anything to completely change yourself magically.
No, yeah. I mean, it's you know, all these tools are things that we... There's two pieces, I think, here, which is that there are things that have power. And so I think of this as being materia, landscape stuff. There are stones that have power. There are beings that have power that are not us.
Sure, 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 sure.
You know, this is animism 101, really. But when it's coming to magic, it is that whole idea, again, that that it's not the spell, as I talk about it in Changeling, is you might stumble across a knife that has some indwelling spirit in it that has power. That might happen. But in 99% of the cases, you're putting power into that object.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might lead that object to waking up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually experimenting with that right now. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
And so it's an interesting thing, right? But given that, you can do all of that work without those tools.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways I talk about it in the book is that, in what way are you that tool? In what way are you fire in your life? In what way are you water in your life? You know, how do those elemental powers, rather than necessarily strictly viewing them as spirits, which I tend to do, how do you view them as kind of being states? I have all of my astrologer friends who I have faith in, though I don't understand them, tell me that because of the year that I was born, basically I have all these outer planets in water signs. And so I have this kind of like, my interpretation of what they've told me is that I have this kind of deep emotional churn that I can get lost in. And so one of the things that I have to do is going like, am I holding that water? Am I holding those energies? Or am I flowing them? Because they got to move, right? Like the same thing. Like if I want to bring up fire aspects in myself, I both need to bring that kind of activity, but I also need to bring in fuel.
Sure.
And so there's all sorts of things we can do that are outside of what I would say are ritual magic, right? That are all incredibly powerful. And yeah, I think it's just all of that's huge stuff. It's if we have to find our own ways in to everything we do. And sometimes it's super easy. You find something and you pick it up as it is and go, oh yeah, I can just use this as it is. And but in most cases we have to adapt it to ourselves.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Totally agree. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. Is there any last thoughts that you have or advice or anything like that that you'd like to give people about the project or about anything else?
I would say, however, if you're thinking about engaging with the process, and for whatever reason, the kind of trance aspects don't work, play with that resist spell and just doing the offerings of the sigil and the green and some food does seem to help. And see what that does for you and how you feel. Because I think it helps the project, is what I get from it.
Fuck yeah. Well, thank you so much, dude. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, fuck yeah. Thanks again so much to Aiden. Always a pleasure to talk to him and hear his thoughts. You can find his work at aidenwachter.com. Check the show notes for links to that, as well as for stuff from today's awesome guest panel. I'll be back after the discussion to talk more about our thought experiment and to share some updates and some other stuff. But for now, let's get back into it with our panel.
See, and I just wanted to add, like, as far as, like, visualizing what you're describing and how you are like walking into a giant mushroom and there are many layers to it. As someone with aphantasia, I can't imagine things. This, to me anyway, like it kind of falls back into like from past memories playing like Skyrim and I am walking into Telmithrin in the area of Solstheim, which you are walking into a giant mushroom.
I think somebody posted about that. And for all we know, like this is a sort of idea that's just out there in the collective unconscious or whatever the fuck, right? Like, and we just sort of picked up on it, right? Because when we were doing this imaginal exercise, like sort of doing this tour of the mushroom, we were sort of seeing things like before the person would talk about it. And that might be one, way to explain that is that there is a sort of like giant mushroom house archetype out there. I'm thinking about the Smurfs, right? Like, I don't know, right?
So, okay. All right. So now I got to throw a curveball to you guys. So like when you're entering this mushroom space, how vast is it when you cross into that realm?
It just depends on the day. Like for me, things aren't fixed very well there. It's not solid, right? So things will be different and weird every time I go. They're still like, they still conform to a general like theme, but it's abstract and strange and at least for me. So yeah, sometimes I'll go and it will feel really big. Sometimes it won't. Sometimes it will feel really empty. Sometimes it will feel like there's tons of people there. So it just really depends.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. New places can pop up there too for me.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I always begin it. Well, actually, there's not consistency as to where I begin, but a lot of times I begin out in a forest with a path going to the green mushroom, and it does end up being a bit fixed. Of it always appears the same when I reach a clearing. There's a meadow, and I'm walking along the path to the mushroom, and it's just a meadow in a world with like the sky above. So as far as how big is it, it's as far as the eye can see, you know.
And all of you talk about seeing this like an interconnected network running through everything, right?
Yeah.
Does it come to a point anywhere?
We actually explored that in the the guided meditation that we're going to release next.
Yeah, Shane and I were just having a conversation about this the other day. Like, there's this idea of the diffuse consciousness. You know, this comes up in, like, if people are talking about this in terms of mycology in some circles, but, you know, it also comes up in places like Douglas Hofstadter's I'm a Strange Loop and, like, all kinds of interesting things there. So, I mean, maybe it's hard to say, like, it's hard to say with information systems to what extent that ever really truly happens in, like, an isolated way anyway. I don't know. I'm getting into the weeds, though. I'm going to reel myself back in here.
Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to throw you into the weeds. I just, I have some ideas, but I'm going to hold on to them for a bit. But
let me share one thing that's been kind of naturally occurring in my practice that is about being connected, I think. In the tavern area, when you just walk in, there's a shared altar, and normally I'll see a lot of candles there, some of which I've lit and some I know are just from other people or just there. And I'll often walk over to it, and most of the time there's something on there, and I get the feeling that it has something to do with, you know, like a mission or whatever that I have to do that day. I found, like, magnifying glasses, scissors and sewing needles. I forget some of the other ones, but it's just been little, almost like practical type of symbolic activities I need to do that kind of become a part of whatever I was in there for in the first place. So, you know, for folks just wanting to get started or whatever, definitely look and see if there's anything waiting for you to kind of guide what you're going to be doing there.
Okay, yeah, and I love that you mentioned that for people that want to get started. Like, let's take it, like, all the way down to earth from, like, a really, really practical standpoint of, like, what does this look like in our practices? Like, when we go to do this imagination magic, like, what would it look like to somebody that was, like, in the room with us?
Oh, okay. Well, I sit in a modified dragon asana, which is just sitting on your heels. So your knees and the tops of your feet are on the ground and your butt is on your heels, but I'll sit on a couple of yoga blocks with a straight back and my eyes closed, and I have a candle lit, and then it's, you know, everything else to be seen is then in my head at that point.
Okay. Hell yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think it's easy for this to sound really fancy and complicated, but it's like, no, you just got to chill and close your eyes and imagine stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I did it in an airplane once. You know, I thought it would be cool to, it was our gifting experiment. One time I did it just after we had taken off. So you could do it just about anywhere. Yeah. Don't do it while you drive.
We're going to be talking more about the experiments in the next installment of this, the part two of Astral Temple. So yeah, looking forward to that.
For me, it's very similar to what Shane described. I usually do some form of stretching or yoga before I go in. And then at that point, I'm sitting in lotus or laying on my back. I don't always use a candle. I usually have a sigil near one of the green mushroom sigils nearby. But yeah, I'm just sitting there or laying there motionless.
Yeah, it's very similar with me. Either lotus or lion. Most of the time I light the green mushroom candle that I have with the green mushroom sigil on it, but not always. And really, if someone's in the room, it just looks like I'm sitting there. They might think I'm asleep, you know, just lying down with your eyes closed.
Yeah, so this is something that you really don't need a lot of tools for. You don't need to, like, go out and buy any, like, I don't know, fucking fancy crystals or whatever the fuck people are trying to sell these days for this kind of thing. You can really just, you know, if you want to light a candle, if that will help you, you can do that. You don't need to. But yeah, it's just experiment with it and fuck around and find out.
Hey, what's up? It's me again, Luxa from the future here. Thanks for listening. I hope you're enjoying. So the bumper music that you've been hearing for today's episode is sampled from the Zygospore Sound Sigil, which is a collaborative audio magic track that me and some other folks from the Green Mushroom Project put together to be used as a tool for helping folks create their own Saprotroph Servitor. You can find a link about creating a Saprotroph, as well as all kinds of other stuff related to the Green Mushroom Project in the show notes. We're going to take a musical interlude in a moment here to hear Adam Matlock, aka Anhistoric, playing the Green Mushroom theme composed by Q Varro. Many thanks to Q for composing it and to Adam for playing it so beautifully. You can hear my conversation with Adam about music, magic, and hypersigil cassette tapes in episode 37, and check out my chat with Q about performance, names, and identity in episode 23. Adam has recently begun work on establishing a food forest in his community, so that's fucking dope. Winnett Food Forest has a mission to provide food and education through small-scale permaculture-informed land stewardship. You can follow the project at Winnett Food Forest on Instagram. That's W-I-N-N-E-T-T, Food Forest, and there will be a link to that in the show notes, along with all kinds of other links to all kinds of other shit. All right, I will be back later on after the rest of the panel to resolve our thought experiment, to share some last thoughts, and to give some updates. But for now, let's roll into that Green Mushroom theme written by Q Varro and performed by Adam Matlock. Enjoy.
Okay, so does anybody have any interesting experiences that they want to share in working with the Green Mushroom Project Astral Temple?
The main one that I have, like, I use it for cleansing a lot, and it's helped a lot of just personally whenever I'm having a bad day to feel better. But the most notable to me was finding, I just call her like the Green Goddess, the what I'm guessing is the egregore of the Green Mushroom. And it's just the embodiment of the intent of the mushroom that sometimes comes in and helps with workings that I do. And it's just a lady that's green. And just, it's hard to describe much else. She just helps out and gives advice if I'm trying to do a work. And all of the advice is in line with the resist mantra of just try to do what's best for yourself and others around you. So that's been pretty cool for me. I don't know if anyone else has had interactions like that.
Yeah, I've had some interesting things come up like that. But yeah, I don't want to bias anybody's opinions or anything.
Oh, no,
but
yeah.
I had a, like I had mentioned earlier, looking at the altar in the front room, my first experience, off script, I went into the mushroom and, I just got my second COVID shot, and my wife had as well, and she was having all these funky, like symptoms that had popped up. And so when I went in there, I was interested in, like doing some sort of healing ritual for her. And on that altar was a big seed. And so I took the seed upstairs and interacted with my four directional contacts in the shared altar space upstairs. And each one gave something to the seed to where it, like through, you know, like sunshine and water and like soil, all kind of entering into and interacting with the seed, it became like a little seedling. And then as I finished the meditation, I got up in the physical world and like went and like pressed it into my wife and like kissed her on the forehead. And she was just like, what the fuck are you doing? You're being weird. And then shortly afterward, her symptoms had been like alleviated. She felt a lot better. So that was really cool.
Very cool.
When I've done spore generation work on the, I do a lot of it in my personal astral space, but when I'm doing it in the mushroom, I go up to the ritual floor on the upper level. And if I really want to blast it out, or if there's somebody specific that has asked for that healing energy, I will open the dome of the mushroom, and the impression that I get of that space beyond is space, you know, Starfield. And it's it just feels like opening it to a like maybe not a vacuum is the right word, but it reduces the resistance in the medium to be able to send those spores out to where they need to go.
Okay. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah, I've had like experiences with like being at the top of the temple and just kind of seeing that mycelial network going out and concentrating in certain places. And I kind of see that as like going across the globe kind of with like nodes of people where they're kind of clustered as well. Physical correlation to that space somehow.
Totally. So in terms of how we like integrate this with some of our other work, is there times when you've like done, I don't know, maybe practical magic in the astral realm or something like that? This is something that I think is a really good thing if you can to be able to play around with, because it gives you a whole lot of freedom, right? If you're able to just, you know, do a ritual without any tools or anything like that, you know, if you can. That's, yeah, a lot of versatility there.
Yeah, that's a good point. The closest I've come to mixing the two was creating the protection servitory that I have, following the outline that you guys have in the Green Mushroom Project for creating a servitory. And I mixed it with my own astral temple and the one I used in the Green Mushroom Temple. And it worked out really well, you know.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I actually do a lot of my work with my Green Mushroom Sapertroph Servitor in the astral space. I discovered that it could act as a flying vehicle for me, which was very fun.
Nice.
And yeah, so sometimes I'll ride around on it there, which is cool. So yeah.
It's really interesting on mine because it's such a mixture with my real physical life and the astral that sometimes I've seen out of the corner of my eye a shadow, and it's been like my servitor, which is for protection. And it's just been like, I didn't expect that. So that's kind of cool.
That's very cool. Yeah. I'm jealous. I wish I was able to have those experiences. that's cool though. I mean, everybody has their different talents and stuff, and yeah, as we were saying earlier, that's not going to, like, you know, if you lack a talent that one of your friends has, it's not going to negate your effectiveness, right? It's just be, you're just different. So yeah.
And everyone has their own. I'm sure you guys have a lot other talents that I don't as well.
Yeah, I'm assuming it probably all balances out in some way. I don't know. Maybe. yeah.
That's why we're a team.
Go team. Yes.
I'm starting to feel nauseated. But yes, indeed, working together is good. Okay, well, fuck yeah. Does anybody have any, like, a general advice or anything, like, any other thoughts that they'd like to share before we kind of button it up here?
I've been using binaural beats during my meditations for imagination zone work, and I think it's really helpful. And yeah, you can find them for free on the internet, so you should.
And a lot of the stuff that I've produced, like, for meditation purposes actually does have binaural beats in it, because I agree it is effective.
I do that too. Another, like, thing that I do just to, like, get into the space is just imagine myself, or, like, for basically, like, any imaginal work, is kind of just falling down a hole and either saying where I want to go or what I want to see or what I want to experience, and just keep imagining falling until, like, something appears in front of me. So might be a technique that can help people kind of access that. I don't know how you guys start, but that's how I kind of get there.
My tip or trick is to have someone who can visualize things and do it for you.
Are you talking about, like, guided meditations perhaps, or, like,
sure,
okay,
that works too. Just like, if you're trying to create a space or do whatever, like, no man, can you just help me with that, or help me do that thing because I can't visualize it, so can you help me with that?
That makes sense. Yeah, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I've always used the binaural beats types music with the meditation, and it makes it a lot easier the more disconnected from the physical reality you are if you're trying to just do an astral temple visualization, at least for me. You know, like blindfold and noise canceling headphones and a relaxed position.
Yeah, see, sound divination is right up my alley, so that speaks volumes to me. That I love that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, for finding binaural beats, I use the Insight meditation app, because their basic timer is really easy to use and it's great, but they also have a very large library of guided meditations and music. It's, you know, mostly woo, self-improvement sort of guided meditation stuff, but there's also, like, there's a very large library of binaural music in there too.
If you can get your hands on a simple, like, you know, desktop synthesizer that you can separate the sounds left and right, you can build and make your own. And I know that the gimmick is to use binaural beats to, you know, you plug it into some sort of meditation track, et cetera, et cetera. But if you just really dive into the three tone work and, like, meditate on that central tone that comes from playing the two different frequencies on both sides, it's a really, really unique level of meditation. And that's just coming from me. That's personal experience. But
I know.
Yeah. Cool. So, like, meditating on, like, how the binaural beat, like, process is sort of generated?
No. Literally just honing in on the central tone. So binaural beats, you have two different frequencies, one different frequency in each ear, and that creates a third frequency that becomes stereo, kind of coming right in front of you.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I was getting into the weeds there philosophically. I was, like, thinking about that this process itself is super interesting, right? This third thing emerging from these two other things, like.
Oh, there absolutely is. But moving beyond that, I think there's, I don't know. I think there's a link to those types of tones in the expansion of human consciousness. Working theory, don't even ask me to explain right now. I'll get back to you guys in, like, three fucking years, something like that. I don't know.
Oh, I definitely can agree.
It's been a long 2 years. I got this book I'm writing. It'll come out in, you know, 45, 50 years, something like that. I don't know.
I know that feeling, dog.
Yeah, right. No.
It has been a weird couple of years.
So, but before we wrap this thing up, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, just for a minute, okay?
Sure.
let's break this down and let's just kind of do a run through on everything at a very, very basic level. Okay. So let's talk about the Astral Temple. Now, you all have talked about how you're getting there, what you're doing, what you're experiencing there. Let's take just a really minute to let's go elementary here, and let's talk about what it actually is for the people who are not really up to speed on that, you know, like me. I mean, of course, I'm up to speed on it, but as other people listen to this, I would like to go a little bit deeper into what it's really all about and how it came to be.
Okay, well, we thought it would be interesting to investigate, you know, the idea of a shared astral space. This is not a new idea. This is sort of like a classic thing. I know in Western occultism, I'm sure that this comes up in other traditions as well, though. Actually, I know for a fact it does. So, like, it's just sort of this classic idea of this shared imaginal space that people can visit in their minds or however they like to contextualize how that happens.
And this one stemmed from the Green Mushroom Project, right?
Yes, yes. This was something that we sort of thought about, you know, even in the original conception of the project, that we thought it would be interesting to experiment with. And if there was enough interest, we figured that we would go ahead with that. So, yeah, it's been a really cool thing. We'll be talking about some of the experiments that we've run in the next episode, which has been, you know, cool and fun. So, yeah, hope, does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah, it does.
All right. Well, yeah. Any last thoughts that anybody has or anything like that?
I'm going to have a lot of things to talk to you guys about on the next time that we all meet up. Because as you know, like, I'm kind of new to this whole process with you guys. Like, I'm just now allowing magic to kind of come back into my life. And so it's kind of just, it led me here. So here I am. But I heard some really interesting things from all of you tonight, and it gave me a lot to think about, and I'm looking forward to touching base on those things a little bit later on.
Cool.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dude. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time, as I do for all of you guys. Lots of cool insights, so fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the same with you is the same on the server in general. You are free to just fucking message me. Do it. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have questions for us, I mean, yeah, we love talking about this stuff. You can find most of us hanging out on the Faithline Council podcast Discord server. You know, you can find me on Instagram at LuxOccultPod too. Yeah, so don't be shy. If you have questions or comments or experiences that you'd like to share, well, let us know. All right. Well, I hope everybody has a fucking fantastic rest of the day or whenever you're listening to this.
Bye.
Bye. Remember, the magic is within you.
Jesus Christ. No.
Where?
Yes.
Where?
Yes. No. It's in the pothole. We talked about this.
Yes. All right. Fuck yeah. Thank you so much again to everybody on the panel, Flood, Josh, Miguel, Ravitz, Shane, and Yara. Thanks also so much to Aiden Wachter. Check out aidenwachter.com to find all of his awesome stuff. Super excited about the new episode of Administrism, which along with Faithline Council is one of Fred or Yara's shows. And along with those, we have all kinds of great content available on the Green Mushroom Podcast Network, including such offerings as Ad Hoc History, Unearthing Paranormalcy, Smuts Up, and we're very pleased to be welcoming our newest sibling shows, XV Planis, which Flood is the host of, as well as Primordia and Grognostics. All kinds of spooky fun to be had here. I'm stoked to be recording an episode about chaos magic and the solar punk movement with Josh here in the not-too-distant future. You can check out Shane's blog at buildingthephilosopherstone.wordpress.com. There'll be links in the show notes to that. And there's also going to be another The Green Mushroom Guided Meditation, which Shane has written, and that's going to be coming out soon. It's read in the dulcet tones of E.K. Manu, who is the host of The Woodland Show, a storytelling podcast that I absolutely love. Very cool stuff.
Thank you also to everybody who joined us for the We the Hollowed live streaming Equinox event, Hauntquinox. Thanks so much to Keats Ross for herding the cats required to put something like that together, as well as for crushing it on the video work and being a very kind and gracious host. There was some really awesome work featured by a lot of talented folks, and it was very fun and a huge honor to be included, so thank you. There will be a link to the show notes to anybody that would like to check out a recording of that event. Speaking of We the Hallowed, shout out to Eric J. Millar. Very honored to be mentioned in the intro to the Four Color Grimoire, which is, I think, out now. I'm so pleased that our conversation proved useful. And if you haven't listened to that yet, you can hear Eric and I talk about pot magic and making divination systems and all kinds of other stuff in episode 41. All right, so if you like the show and you're into what I'm doing, tell a friend or a bitter rival or post about it on social media. Word of mouth is huge, so that is always very helpful. Thank you. You can now leave ratings on Spotify, so that's a thing too. And for people who are like already doing this stuff, your support really makes a huge difference. So thank you so much. And if you would like to support the show on Patreon, you can take a bibliomancy break with me. There are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. And to my Patreon supporters, thank you so fucking much. Your support really means a lot, and I appreciate it very deeply, so thank you. Okay, as promised, let's revisit our epistemological thought experiment about Mary and Mary's black and white room. Recall that the experiment went like this. Mary lives in a black and white room, reads black and white books, and uses screens that only display images in black and white to learn everything that has ever been discovered about color vision in physics and biology and whatever else. One day, Mary's computer screen breaks and displays the color red. And for the first time, Mary sees color. Okay, so here's the question. From this happening, did Mary learn anything new? Okay, so this is from the site bigthink.com that had some good summations of some of these things. And this is sort of what they sum up about the thinking here. So if Mary does learn something new, it shows that qualia, individual occurrences of subjective elements of experiences, exist. And Mary has access to all possible information other than experience before seeing the color and still learn something new. So the experience is what taught Mary the new thing in this case. So this has implications for what knowledge and mental states are, because if Mary learns something new, then mental states, like seeing color, can't be described entirely by physical facts. There would have to be more to it, something subjective and dependent on experience. So if Mary doesn't learn anything new, then we have to apply the idea that knowing physical facts is identical to experiencing something everywhere. For example, we would have to say that knowing all about echolocation is similar to knowing what it would be like to use echolocation. This experiment is unique in terms of like some of the other ones that were listed, because the author ended up changing their mind about it and argued later that Mary seeing red doesn't count as evidence that qualia exists. So, however, the problems posed by this obviously are still widely debated. So thank you to bigthink.com for that. What do you all think? Is qualia a thing? To what extent is it a thing? Experience, facts, what have you? I'm curious to hear people's thoughts. So the way that I'm thinking about it right now touches on something that Joy mentioned in the last episode of the show about there being these layers of abstraction that we put on top of things that end up leading away from experience and therefore away from true understanding. The further we move away from our own bodies and the sort of semiotic anchors that underpin our cognitive processes, the more map and less territory we get. I'm of course referring to the map-territory relation, which reminds us that looking at a map of a place is not the same as going to that place. I'm not sure that data, regardless of how detailed it is, can ever replace experience. I don't think that experience can ever replace experience either. You can never eat the same apple twice or whatever. Yes, but write to me at luxocultpod@gmail.com and let me know what you think about this or other topics. Like I said, if you're into me reading what you've written on the show, please indicate that, and perhaps I will. And thank you so much to everybody who has reached out. It's really cool to hear from all of you. It's always an inspiration to like see all the cool stuff that you're up to and all of the many fun, creative, and meaningful ways that people have incorporated their work with magic and with the Green Mushroom Project into their lives and their practices. Much love and mush love to everybody listening and everybody participating in the Green Mushroom Project, regardless of what that looks like for you in your life. We're going to end with everybody from the panel saying the resist words in a few minutes, but first, here are a few final thoughts. I'd like to return to something that Aiden Wachter mentioned earlier, having to do with holding energies versus flowing energies. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And I think that, at least for me, the idea of like flowing energy has to do with being more of a participant in the sort of dance going on around us, or maybe like has to do with bending as opposed to breaking. Flow, I guess, is right in there. It can be easy to get in the habit of like holding in or holding back things that we're maybe not comfortable experiencing. This happens with me. I've noticed that it often has to do sometimes with like a narrative in my head about not having the right to feel what I feel, or like feeling silly about it, or like ashamed about it or something. But the really sort of ironic thing about this situation is, though, is that by fighting against feeling the thing, all it does is like hold it in close. Instead of getting away from the bad feeling, you're grasping onto it and refusing to acknowledge it. And so to let it flow away, I think it's important to have enough self-compassion to give yourself permission to feel whatever you feel, even if it's stuff that you don't want to have to deal with. I guess that's sort of what processing is. I don't know. I'm definitely out of my fucking area of expertise here. Regardless, it certainly can suck pretty bad, but it's better to like deal with one's issues rather than having them deal with you, right? Right. And as I mentioned earlier, it's thought that, you know, for survival reasons, there's a sort of built-in negativity bias in our brains, meaning that we're likely to notice shitty things much more than good things. And this can make clearly assessing situations difficult, especially if you're like me and you tend to be really hard on yourself. I'm working on this stuff, and one of the ways that I'm doing so is by using a sort of like visualization. Well, this one definition of visualization, it's a sticky term, as we learned earlier. But anyway, to like imagine that I'm someone else, like somebody else that I've been put in charge of taking care of, and attempting to treat myself how I would treat them. I mean, it sounds like sort of stupid and convoluted and, I don't know, maybe a little bonkers, but I'm finding it pretty useful. This is similar to an idea that Aiden brings up in Changeling about looking at the things that we tell ourselves about something versus what we tell other people about it. And I've had it happen a few times before in the past where it was my own instinct to like protect others that alerted me that the situation that I was in was not a good one. But it took recognizing that like feeling of wanting to protect other people to like get that I needed to protect myself too. So, I mean, and these are just, I don't know, examples, but see, like feelings, like they're not just these annoying distractions from rational thinking, which is sometimes the narrative I find myself slipping into, even though it's very stupid and not correct. Anyway, they exist for a reason and serve important functions, which providing information is one of them. Learning to interpret this abstract language of feelings is a whole other thing, and it takes years of hard work. At least it's been taking me that long. Still have not figured it all out. I'm guessing it's probably much easier for some people than others. But in like a general sense, I think that doing this stuff is really good, and it's a big part of like gaining self-mastery. It's about learning to see more clearly and to become more lucid in the dream that we call life. Self-compassion, giving yourself permission to be what and who you are and feel what you're feeling when you're feeling it, is how to begin to learn this like language, or to use the data that you're being provided with. I'm not saying to like act on every whim, just notice what's going on. Be more lucid. And as we've established pretty well today, you really can't know what it's like in somebody else's mind. So have some fucking compassion with the people you interact with, and patience with the fact that communication is difficult and language is imperfect. And when you can't see the path from A to B, magic can be a great vehicle in which to make this jump. All right, well, thanks again so much to Aiden Wachter and to Flood, Josh, Miguel, Ravitz, Shane, and Yara. And thank you all so much for listening to the Lux Occult podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this second chapter of the Green Mushroom Project audio grimoire. Don't forget to keep kicking ass, stay strong, and stay fucking curious. All right, let's go out with our panel here. Much love, y'all. Cheers.
Remember to resist.
Resist
by maintaining sovereignty of self.
Resist by maintaining the love of itself.
Resist by maintaining
your loyalty to love and pleasure.
Resist with acts of
radical
kindness,
focus
on the
path of better times.
All right, fuck yeah.
Fuck
yeah! Thank you guys so much for joining me.
And welcome into your hearts the eldritch horror that is Ron Jeremy's weird
hair. Yes. Open yourself to Ron Jeremy.
Lux Occult is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. To hear more great independent productions like the one you just listened to, visit our catalog at tgmpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to XV Planet. Greetings, friends, fiends, and lovers of strange and wondrous things. My name is Flood, and I am the host of XV Planet, a bi-weekly podcast of the odd and unusual. The core of XV Planet is a documentary-style exploration into paranormal investigations that I and my ever-evolving group of magical misfits conduct. We take a look at the history, the mystery, then go see it for ourselves, and then we bring that experience, and on occasion, that evidence, to your ears. Alongside the investigations, you'll find a treasure trove of other content, like interviews with authors, art historians, mediums, UFO researchers, cryptid hunters, fellow paranormal investigators, as well as deep dives into the arts, exploring topics like the Killing Joke frontman Jazz Coleman's magical practices and how that propelled the band forward, and whether or not David Lynch was really conducting occult rituals through Twin Peaks: The Return. So follow XV Planet today and get caught up on the journey, because I can promise you, it only gets stranger from here. I'll see you on the fifth plane.
Hi, I'm Frater Yarmurud.
And I'm Zarina.
And we'd like to introduce you to administrism.
What is administrism?
As an occultist, for years I felt the universe directing me towards a practice that was ecologically based, with a foundation laid out by cultures untouched by the influence of what's become modern Western society. With labels like shamanism and neo-shamanism carrying too much uncomfortable post-colonial baggage, I've decided to take my own approach.
Join Yara and me as we research and develop a magical system where we recognize our place in nature with all the life that surrounds us. We want to share with you our journey into a paradigm that incorporates ritual and ecology, anthropology and metaphysics, biology, and the occult.
Using ethically sourced material, historical accounts, ethnographic records, and our own personal experience, we want to share our discoveries as we watch administrism grow in an organic blend of traditional spirituality, modern science, and a dash of homesteading, without all the connotations associated with labels like shamanism.
We hope that by listening to how administrism sprouts in us, it will plant its seeds into your own practice. This way, you can find your own balance between magic and nature.
Because the world needs room for both.
And don't forget, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Do you have too much on your mind? Are your neural processes slowed by unused memories, cluttering up your Illumin Industries installed electro-bio memory implant? The Illumin Industries Memory Cloud Service, you can upload these precious moments for preservation and enjoy them whenever and wherever you wish without sacrificing operational speed. Something you'd rather never have to think about again? Users can tag and organize memories to allow for selective viewing. Only the best of memories. Memory Cloud. Just another way Illumin Industries is making IT work for you. See Cyber Catalog for important information about our privacy policy. Illumin Industries and its affiliates reserve the right to change these policies at any time without notice. Memory Cloud data is backed up daily. Not responsible for lost or corrupted files. Must be Illuminum Select memory to use memory tagging feature. Remember.